Hello, everyone, and welcome to Oh, a Podcast, the podcast about playing games and making games, brought to you by O-Rock Studios. I'm Paul Franzen, the head boy of O-Rock.
And I'm Michael Gray, the head author of O-Rock. I did writing this past month, maybe.
Okay, all right. We are recording a little earlier in the month than we usually do. We usually record, towards the end of the month, but there's all these holidays popping off then. So I don't know if that means we're going to have very little to talk about or what. I guess we're going to find out.
Well, I know we were talking about the holidays last month, right? Wasn't there something left over we needed to discuss? Like you said, there's Christmas, and then a week later, there's New Year's. Oh, yeah, my complaint was people don't know if New Year's Eve or New Year's Day is the holiday. Doesn't it seem like half the places celebrate New Year's Day and the other half celebrate New Year's Eve?
I feel like New Year's Day is the one you want off from work, right? Because if you're staying up late the night before, you don't want to have to go into work the next day. Certainly not early in the morning. So I feel like day should be the holiday.
But New Year's Eve is the one where everybody has the big party.
That's true. New Year's Eve is when you actually do stuff, and you might need to prepare for such a party. In which case, having the day off would be quite helpful. Oh, man, the solution is you should just have both days off, right? But then, then how does that work?
Do businesses actually do that? I don't know.
I know when I worked full time for an actual company, we probably talked about this. If a holiday was on a Thursday, you'd also get the Friday off. So in that case, if it was New Year's Eve on a Thursday, then you'd also have New Year's Day off by default. But if it was in the middle of a week, I don't know.
That'd be nice if they gave you just both days off in the middle of the week. Yeah.
But then what? You have Wednesday and Thursday off, and then you come back in on Friday. That would be ridiculous.
Oh, okay.
It's sort of similar with Christmas, though, right? Because a lot of people do stuff on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. So, I don't know.
I do know that with, Halloween, the day after Halloween, also the day after Valentine's Day, is, an unofficial holiday because you can go to the stores and get half-price candy.
Yeah. Some of our stores are actually already doing discounts on Christmas stuff around here. I think that's kind of wild. Jumping the gun a little bit.
Well, I don't know how to interpret that statement.
I think, it's interesting to me that Ollie's Bargain Outlet store near us, they're doing 25% off everything, all of their Christmas stuff, except wrapping paper, I think they said, but also 25% off all toys.
Wow.
And I guess that's interesting to me because you'd think they would still be selling a lot of that stuff up until Christmas, but by discounting it, that tells me that they're sort of hustling to get rid of that stuff.
Yeah, that's what I think. Gosh. It's not the opposite.
So it seems strange to me.
Like Halloween candy or Valentine's Day candy where the week before they up the price by 25%, or in the case of flowers, where they up the price by 300% for the entire month.
But getting back to what you were saying before, I do think that, man, I don't know, some companies just give you the whole week off, don't they? Do you just, are there places where you just get off basically from Christmas until the end of the month?
Because that would make sense. Nice. I don't know which companies would do that.
My
company companies just afford to not have anybody work for a week. It's saying here that movie and the TV industry, those people can go, they can take 2 to 4 weeks off during the holidays, so they do. And Congress, of course, takes 3 weeks off, but they do that every other month. Did I say every other month? Every month?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they only work a few days a year.
Well, it's interesting. I feel like this is something that should have come up during Cat President 3. Gosh, I don't know if we could talk about real-life political stuff without offending people, but We're in currently what's called a lame duck Congress, because there's a whole new Congress coming in January, right? January 1st, whole new bunch of people coming. So lame duck is what they call it when you have the last month of the Congress, because if they don't get something done by the end of the month, then it gets reset. There's a lot of things like, this is why we shouldn't make political games. Do you know what things actually stay on, or what things necessarily have to get reset by the end of the year? Because I know some things do and some things don't, I think.
No. No, definitely not.
We have no idea what things get reset and what things don't. Okay.
No, I know in a situation where, like, the party that controls Congress is flipped next year. So if, for example, say the Democrats have a majority in the Congress right now, and then Republicans have a majority starting in January, then that means Democrats have to push to get everything that they can done by the end of the year, because they're not going to be able to get anything done for the next 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, vice versa. It has nothing to do with Democrats specifically, just whichever party is in control doesn't want to do anything that benefits the other party. It's just how it is.
That's something we're sort of seeing, and it just surprises me to see which things they are trying to push through to get, you know, get done before the end of the year, and then other things they're like, nah, we're just going to delay it a week, and then let the next Congress deal with it. Because apparently we don't know much about politics. It always confuses me as to which thing gets done right away and which things get pushed back.
You know, it makes me think that maybe something that is, like, popular or has bipartisan support, I wonder if that is something that would get pushed to next year because they know that's going to pass regardless, so they want to focus on getting stuff that's only going to pass with the current Congress. That would at least logically make sense to me. I do not know if that's how it actually works out, but I could understand it.
I know, but it feels like that's something that might backfire if they're like, oh man, here's something that's not popular. We won't be able to push it through next year, so let's just do all the unpopular stuff. I don't know why Congress would want to publish any unpopular laws anyway. They should only do stuff that everybody likes, right? They want to get reelected.
But, well, maybe you want the lame duck to take care of that, though, because these are the percentage of Congress isn't going to be coming back next month. So, hey, who cares if people like them or not? They're not going to be around anyway.
So just throw all the retirees under the bus. Okay.
Yes, exactly.
That is what happens in politics a lot. I think that's a joke it should be a joke in one of the cat president games, is like, we always blame the previous president for anything that went wrong. Because that's very convenient because you're usually blaming somebody that your friends don't like. Yeah.
Well, of course. And then they take credit for anything positive that happens during their term, even if it was something that was set in motion by the previous administration. It's like, that happened while I was president, so I get the credit for it.
That is a joke in Cat President 2, I think.
It is perfect.
Or no, Cat President 3, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we see that over and over and over again. No matter who's in office. Anything good that happens is thanks to me. Anything bad that happens is because of my predecessor.
Anyway, it's been kind of interesting watching the news with the lame duck Congress rushing to pass a bunch of bills. It's like, I wish they were that energetic the entire year, and not just the 2 weeks out of December where they actually work. Because they don't work this week or next week. They do get 2 weeks off, the last 2 weeks of December off.
Oh, that's so nice that they've given themselves off all that time. That's so nice of them.
That way they can go back home and, I don't know. Who knows? I'm just checking, like, the congressional calendar now, and it looks like they do something where certain days are blocked off as days that they will not be voting.
Okay.
And I am sure, just absolutely sure, there are some people in Congress who are like, well, no vote today, I don't have to go into work today. That seems like something that would totally happen, because I've had coworkers before.
I believe we made an entire game about it.
Yes, yes.
So you mentioned earlier that you did some game writing this month. What have you been working on?
Did I finish Cap President 3 this month or last month? I don't know.
Yeah, oh, you sent that in November the 29th.
Okay, then I did nothing this month.
That was after we recorded the last podcast, though. So it counts for this one.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Sounds good.
Well, that's very productive, very exciting that we have all that going on. I'm basically finished editing the second pathway now. Should be sending that over tomorrow. And then I get to get started on the Cats-inspired pathway, which I am both nervous and excited about.
It'll be so much fun. So Congress does have New Year's Eve and New Year's Day off. They gave themselves both day off.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah.
Wait a minute. And they have January 2nd off as well.
Oh, yeah, sure. Why not toss that in?
Because New Year's Day is a Sunday, so so they gave themselves the Monday off.
Oh, that's so good of them.
So yeah, the cats thing should be interesting. Yeah. I hope it works.
I have every confidence that it will turn out great. But yeah, that's pretty much where Cat President 3 is right now. All the storylines written. We're in the midst of editing and revising them. Nowhere near coding at the moment. That'll happen sometime in the new year. Got plenty of time to get this to do this one, so that's good.
Yeah, script will need a lot of workshopping, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, my goal would be like, you know, I think Cat President 1 was like summer 2016, and then Cat President 2 was fall 2020. So you know, somewhere in the summer to fall range of 2024. So plenty of time.
Yep, and let's hope all the various people run for president that we're expecting. So obviously we need one of the singers from Cats to run for president this session.
Oh man, I want to make jokes based on who all the six cats are, but I don't want to spoil anything just yet. Oh well. Moving on to the mom's game, I'm still putting the first pathway together. I just got to chapter 3 earlier today. Like I said, I'm kind of doing all the art and everything as I go. That's why it's not like going super, super quick. I am very concerned about what's going to happen when I get to a puzzle. I'm glad you already did all the coding for that, but I'm concerned about what I'm going to have to change to switch to the upgraded resolution and stuff like that. And
be able to do that. Like, that'll be on my list. And
okay.
Is it on the list of things for me to do?
I need to update that list.
Next month, I'll... yeah.
But I have been updating the files on the Google Drive every day. So it has the most up-to-date version of the script, and whenever I create a new art asset or add music or sound effects or whatever, I've been putting all of that into the folder as well. So theoretically, if you download all that stuff, you should be able to play the current build of the game. I guess fingers crossed that whether that'll work or not.
I'm changing the to-do list right now to have the... Oh, cool. There we go.
Yeah, I honestly haven't looked at the to-do list in a while. I've just been sort of going through the Word documents and just based working on those.
Yeah, so I put redo the puzzles in HD. Cool. Moved it from anyone list to my specific
Yay!
List.
Yay! Oh, that's so much better. Oh, I love not having to do the hard stuff.
And then I was like halfway through working on the Nerdy Mom art, and then I stopped.
Oh, yeah.
That's something I'll go back to.
I should have lots of characters and backgrounds in the drive there for you to play with and do whatever you want with.
Yep.
So yeah, that's sort of the quick and dirty update on the Mom's game. Oh, one thing I wanted to talk with you about. Did I see that you were streaming the Lost Oregon City Gold the other day?
Yes, I did. I did do a live stream of
cool.
that.
That's cool. How did that go?
I should have announced it, I guess. It went fine. People seemed impressed.
All right.
Yeah, I never really, schedule my live streams in advance. And there is a story not a very interesting one. I tried live streaming earlier that day, a game called The Fantastic Kitty Roo, which one of my followers sent me. Just somebody messaged me on Twitter saying, you know, I made my own game. I've been following you so-and-so for years. Aww. So they just wanted to share the game with me. I tried playing this game. I tried live streaming that game, and it didn't work. I got just complaints. It's like, I can't hear you. The people in the live stream are just complaining the whole time. And so it was a 5-minute live stream.
Oh, that's disappointing. It's kind of I'm looking at the Steam page now. This looks really, really nice. It says it's a blend of visual novel, point and click, and rhythm games, hitting a lot of really good genres there. That's cool.
I saw the rhythm game part. That's about as far as I got. I didn't get to the rest of the stuff, because like I said, I only played for 5 to 6 minutes. So I didn't have enough time that night to do the Nancy Drew game I was going to live stream. So I did Lost Oregon City Gold instead.
Gotcha.
Because I figured I could beat that game relatively quickly, but it took me about 2 minutes. I mean, 2 hours.
You got lost in the woods, didn't you? You definitely got lost in the woods.
No. I don't think I got stuck on any of the puzzles. Maybe the Oregon Trail style puzzle. I know somebody joined the chat at that exact moment, and they were quite confused as to what was happening. Like, what is this game? And I was like, no, I promise this isn't the entire game. And then they figured it out when the game went back to normal, and they could see the characters and stuff like that. But yeah, a lot of comments. It's like, congratulations on the game. Congratulations on making a game. You did a good job. It's very interesting. Stuff like that. Yeah.
Aw, that's really nice. It does concern me sometimes. I feel like when you talk about one of our games, I feel like you sometimes get comments from your followers and fans. They're like, oh, wow, that's so cool that you made a game. It concerns me that they don't know you've been making games for like 8 years or however long it's been.
Yeah, I don't understand that either, because I mentioned that in the video. It's like, okay, no, I name drop at least 4 or 5 of the games. It's like one of the characters, like, okay, this is Samantha Bartley. She was also in The Pizza Delivery Boy Who Saved the World.
Yeah.
And one of the other actors from Pizza Delivery Boy was actually in the audience. Like, I was in there too.
Oh, like, cool. Hey. It's cool. I'm glad you got a chance to do that. Sorry I wasn't able to hop in too.
I was going to say, I gave a bunch of like behind the scenes facts and info, and then all of that was just repeated in the bonus section. I was like, oh, I should have thought about facts which weren't actually in the actual game, which actually counted as high school facts.
Oh, you just shouldn't have done the bonus path. You shouldn't have done the behind the scenes pathway. Like, you were the real life.
I should just cut that out. Yeah.
You were the live behind the scenes person. You been playing any good games lately, besides the Lost Oregon City Gold?
Oh, man, nothing holds a candle to that one.
Well, obviously,
I was going to ask, I tried asking people, like, if I made a sequel, what would the sequel be? Where would be another good place to, like, have when
the
these
Lost
games
Ithaca
take place?
Gold. Come take your family to... Oh, wait, I guess, canonically, Uncle Paul lives in California, doesn't he? Well, maybe Uncle Paul moves
Oregon,
to Ithaca,
right?
And you guys have to make a trip out here, and we can do a game about Ithaca.
You could just take pictures of all the nearby places. I'm sure there are famous places.
Yeah, we have a lot of waterfalls. We're known for our waterfalls. Ithaca is gorgeous, they say. Ha ha.
I know there was a joke about it in the comic strip Foxtrot. Because they did a storyline based on the Odyssey. Yeah. And Ithaca is the hometown that Odysseus is trying to get to in the Odyssey. Yeah. But the person thought it was Ithaca, New York. Ha ha ha. And of course, you know, like teenage me, never having heard of Ithaca, New York, is like, what? I don't understand this punchline at all.
We are not a very big, well-known city. We're no Oregon City out here. Although some have tried to say that Ithaca is the Oregon City of the East, but it hasn't really caught on, you know?
Yes. I don't know if anybody knows about Oregon City, to be honest. If it wasn't called Oregon City, no one would know where it was located.
But have you been playing anything else besides Oregon City Gold?
Yeah, I just finished playing Sherlock Holmes versus Jack the Ripper. I'll be interested in seeing how people feel about my walkthrough for this game. Because it feels like I didn't like the game and was mean to it the whole time around. But in my defense, it's not a very good game. So I'll be interested in seeing how people react to the walkthrough. If they'll keep watching or if they'll just like rage quit watching the walkthrough.
Yeah, do people generally like it when like you're playing a game that you don't really like and you're making fun of it, or do they just prefer when you're playing games that you're enjoying?
I don't know. How often do I play games I don't like? It feels like people enjoy the Sherlock Holmes games, but I feel like the Sherlock Holmes games have a lot of problems. Each one seems rather different in terms of what its problems are. So like, I'm gonna have to look this up now. Sherlock Holmes, The Devil's Daughter. Man, that game. It really wanted to be whatever that cool game series is. I think it's not Tomb Raider, but what the new, like they had a movie come out.
Oh,
like it.
Yes. Nathan Drake is the character.
That's it. Yeah, Nathan Uncharted.
And
there we go.
Uncharted. Yeah. Why did I know the character's name before the game? I've never even played it or seen the movie.
Anyway, really wanted to be Uncharted the
gotcha.
Game. And like it's Uncharted is not a Sherlock Holmes mystery.
No, it's sort of an action thing, isn't it?
It's very action, like exploring old temples and stuff like that. And so it's just totally out of place to have Sherlock Holmes exploring this old temple and trying to avoid temple traps and things like that.
I don't know. Sherlock Holmes as Indiana Jones is kind of a fun sounding premise.
Yeah. I think with case number two, they make you do like just an overly long segment, which is just like exploring this temple and dodging traps, basically. Gets pretty boring, actually. And case number one was where you have to run in the woods to avoid being shot by a hunter. And that goes on for like 40 minutes. It takes forever. It's just not fun. Oh yeah, in case number one, also we have the, you're trying to follow a suspect. And so that happens for like 40 minutes where you sneak around, you can't be seen by the suspect, you're jumping over rooftops and things like that. And I just feel it's like, if you want to make an action game, make an action game, but this is a Sherlock Holmes mystery series.
Yeah, so wait, it's like stealth action running around and jumping. It's not like puzzle solving,
yes,
mystery solving.
That is a lot of the Sherlock Holmes, The Devil's Daughter.
That is a
And that's why I said
pairing. Okay. Yeah.
It feels like they just wanted to make an Uncharted game.
Yeah, okay.
And then case number 3, 90% of it takes place on like one screen, which is it's kind of sad, actually, case number 3. And then case number 4 is, like, super short compared to all the others. I think that's how that game works. It really felt like they had the budget to make the first two and a half cases, and then the last two just got rushed or severely cut down.
So this is, like, a series where, like, all 4 of these games are made by the same company? Is that right?
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Because I could see, like, if it's different developers just doing their own spin on Sherlock Holmes, I got to see why they might turn out to be kind of different from one another. It's interesting that it's all one company doing this, and they just kind of keep changing.
They've done,
what it's...
You know, good for them for being, like, considered the company that does the Sherlock Holmes things, because I'm sure there are, like, a million companies. There are, like, dozens of Sherlock Holmes video games.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought.
They get credit for being the Sherlock Holmes video game series, so lucky for them.
And, well, Sherlock Holmes is one of those, like, weird public domain things, right, where it's like the character is sort of in the public domain and sort of not, like some books are, some aren't, and you have to be like really careful what elements you use. That's right, yeah, because that's why that's there's always so much hand wringing about whether if you have Sherlock Holmes in your story, whether you can name him that or have to name him something silly like Herlock Sholmes.
Yeah. And I'm seeing here, well, something they've done a lot with the Sherlock Holmes series is they just keep remaking the same games. They just, like, give it a graphic upgrade and re-release it for Wii or re-release it for Xbox. Or even with, they re-release it for PC. So I think with Sherlock Holmes versus Jack the Ripper, the copy I had was just a re-release. Because you can tell when they update the graphics for the re-release, they only change, like, the characters' faces and hands. They don't actually change the bodies in most cases. So you've got, like, really detailed face and hands on, like, a pixelated body.
Huh. Okay. Well, that sounds kind of weird.
A little bit of an exaggeration. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's like, wow, I can tell that this person is not wearing, like, actual clothing. It's very flat.
Okay, so that actually makes me think a lot of, like, N64 games, or, like GoldenEye specifically, where you have the 3D character models, but, like, the 3D elements are basically just, like, circles and spheres with faces painted on them. If you look at them a little more closely, they don't have, like, they barely have noses that pop out of their faces. That's sort of what I'm picturing now.
All right. It actually is saying here The Devil's Daughter was published by someone else. Well, then I don't understand. I know that happens a lot with... Oh, man. Okay, so what's the difference between a developer and a publisher? Because it's saying right here we've got the one company developed all the Sherlock Holmes games, but they've got 7 or 8 different publishers. Maybe that accounts for the differences between the various games.
Yeah, could be. I mean, the developers, the one who are actually, like, sitting down making the games, the publishers distribute the games, but the publishers often have, like, a lot of veto power or creative control, so it could be they've been moving from publisher to publisher, and this publisher's like, yeah, I want to make an action game this time. Can you make it an action game? Whereas a different publisher's like, yeah, I kind of want a mystery game. I mean, it's like us, right? We're the developers of our games, and we are the publishers on most platforms, except for our console releases of Pizza Delivery Boy. Our Penguin Pop was our publisher for those games. So yeah, maybe there's publisher input changing from game to game.
Okay. But I guess getting back specifically to Sherlock Holmes versus Jack the Ripper, I don't know why I've been like slamming The Devil's Daughter when I haven't played that game in forever. But
yeah. When you could be slamming Sherlock Holmes versus Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, like it was the... So Sherlock Holmes versus Jack the Ripper is a terrible video game. It's something that a lot of the Sherlock Holmes games have a problem with is the same thing that a lot of like the Superman stories have a problem with. Like, they say Superman's so strong, they have to find an excuse for why he can't just beat up the bad guy in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And Sherlock Holmes has that problem, too. It's like, we need an excuse for why he does not solve the mystery in 5 minutes. And so this game's excuse is that he just isn't really trying.
Okay.
There are just, like, long periods of time where it's like, oh, it's 2 weeks later. What has Holmes done in the meantime? He has done diddly squat. He's been staying at home, not really doing anything.
See, now I see an opportunity there for, like, a weird fourth wall breaking puzzle where, like, you as the player have to somehow manipulate and convince, motivate, that's the word I'm looking for, motivate the player character to do something. Like, you have to, like, I'm picturing a scene where, like Sherlock Holmes is in bed and you know, his alarm keeps going off and he doesn't want to get up. So you, as the player, like, have to click on things and make sure he gets out of bed and gets to work. Like, maybe you have to do something that moves the alarm clock away so that he can't just turn it off and go back to sleep. And then, like, when he's up, you have to, like, take his sheets away or something, take his blanket away so he can't get comfortable again.
That would be a fun puzzle, I feel like.
Wouldn't that?
There's a couple of Sherlock Holmes stories, or even, like, I think in The Devil's Daughter, there's like, a point where Holmes is like, I'm so bored, I want something to do.
Yeah, you have to... What if that was just the whole game? Was you trying to motivate this sluggish, bored person to do the thing that you're trying to get done? But then I guess that really opens up questions of, like, who are you then? Like, how are you manipulating the world? Are you some sort of, like, omnipotent being? Or are you playing as, like his roommate? You're playing as Holmes' roommate trying to get him to get off his butt?
Like, yeah, no, I mean, his roommate is your Dr. Watson, who occasionally... like, occasionally you play as either character, but it's the sort of thing. Sometimes you play as one, sometimes you play as the other, and sometimes they're both together at the same place. But that's a common question for most adventure games, right? Like, if I'm playing Monkey Island or something, and I try to put two items together,
sure.
Guybrush is going to say, I don't think I can do that. Like, who is he talking to? Who's suggesting it to him, right?
Man, that's a
He's
good
talking
point
directly
yet.
To the, like, player who he can't see.
Yeah, it already sort of has that perspective of you, the player, basically instructing Guybrush to do things. That's like the game Lifeline that I was just talking about last month, the voice-controlled game where you're issuing directives to a character. That's sort of how a lot of adventure games work, isn't it? Huh. I don't know. I really want to make a game about Sherlock Holmes' highly motivated roommate. I don't want it to be Watson, though. That's too easy. Like, I don't want it to be a character that's already known. I want it to be Sherlock Holmes and his roommate Dave.
I know, like, Watson doesn't always live with Holmes, right? Because,
perfect,
I mean, Watson's
perfect.
Married. He has, like, two or three different wives over the course of the series of, like, short stories. So
I want to play as
his roommate. Plenty of time when he's not there.
Who gets really annoyed with Holmes when Holmes is, like, pacing around the apartment, making lots of noise, I don't know. Like Holmes as a crappy roommate, I think, would be... Right for a lot of entertainment.
Isn't there a lot of jokes like that in the Great Ace Attorney?
Yeah, maybe there is. Yeah, you're right. He already has a roommate. He
doesn't
has a
like
girl
living
roommate.
In.
Yeah. Oh,
well, I mean, even Ryunosuke is like considered his roommate because he lives and works out of Sherlock Holmes' attic.
Yeah.
And whenever he comes down, like, Holmes is giving him garbage.
Oh man. I think in my game, Sherlock Holmes and his roommate, Dave, I think he doesn't solve any mysteries at all. It is like a visual novel or an adventure game, but it's not action-adventure, it's not stealth. It's just your roommate trying to get Holmes to do stuff. But we don't actually go into what any of that stuff is, ultimately. It's all about his home life.
Going back to Jack the Ripper, I feel like part of the reason...
Yes.
Part of the reason he has to be inefficient is because the game clearly wanted all five of the Jack the Ripper murders to occur. So they wanted to have like him investigate all five of the murders. But those were like, what, 3 months apart?
Right. So you have to justify
the
why
the game follows.
You have to justify why Holmes doesn't just solve it right away and prevent all these other murders from happening, which is pretty dark.
Why did he not catch it? Yeah. Like,
we have to make this detective worse so that more people get murdered.
Yep. So there's a lot of fetch quests in the game, but I think one of the things I found really infuriating is, like, one of the suspects, Holmes knows where this guy lives, like, Oh, it was the second video of my walkthrough, but it's like video number 12 before. So it's like 7 hours before Holmes catches this suspect, Dr. Tumblety, and the
Doctor
solution
what?
Is just to go
wait,
to his
wait,
house
Doctor
and talk
what?
To him. Dr. Tumblety? He was a real life person, so.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind. Never mind. It's a funny sounding name, that's all. Sorry, continue.
No, I was just complaining that, like, Holmes has been on the trail of this suspect for a really, really long time, like 7 or so hours of gameplay, and the solution is just go to his house and meet him there when you've known where he's lived ever since, like, the very start of the game. It's like, well, then what was the point of going to character A to get the thing from character B to get the thing for character C so you could break into the jail and talk to the person who knows the person who knows Dr. Tumblety? It was just, that's the sort of thing you had to do. And then at the end, they just sort of throw it all out, and somebody's like, oh, by the way, Tumblety just went back to his house. You can meet him there now. And that's how Holmes catches up to him.
Ooh, that is just some adventure game busy work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I see people talk about that sometimes, about when you're making a puzzle-heavy game like that, about how you really need to be writing puzzles that also drive the story forward, as opposed to puzzles that are just like brick walls that go in your way for the purpose of having a puzzle there. And that's sort of what it sounds like you're describing is a very brick wall puzzle. Like,
oh yeah, I mean that one puzzle I described was kind of bad.
Mm. Yeah,
it's not like Holmes is on a first name basis with the police there. Like, he could just walk into the police station and say, hey, I hear you've got somebody detained, can I talk to this person? And the police would probably say yes, as I complained about, like, multiple times, but nope.
Hmm. So you're not recommending this game is what I'm getting.
No, it's just terrible. Like, if you gave me enough time, I'd probably be able to remember, like, what we do in the first thing. Like, we get pills. I think we have to do something to get pills from the doctor so we could give it to this man so he could go live with his niece, so we could give something else to our guy Finley, and Finley gives us the bag, which belongs to the police constable, and that way the police constable will give you the preliminary autopsy report. And that's, like, that's what the game starts out with, this hour-long fetch quest just to get a basic autopsy report.
I wonder if part of the problem is that that puzzles like that, like these extended kind of silly, seemingly pointless puzzles, I wonder if those work better in a more comedy-oriented game than in what I assuming is a fairly serious, staid game in Sherlock Holmes. Like
it's a serious,
maybe,
dark game. Yeah, this one is one of the darker ones.
So the fact that it's a serious game, I wonder if that just further highlights the somewhat ridiculousness of the steps that you sometimes have to go through in an adventure game in order to progress. Whereas in a game like Monkey Island, those steps just sort of, you're like, yeah, okay, this world is ridiculous, so this makes sense. Sure, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, whereas, like, this is a realistic thing. It's like,
yeah,
three women have been murdered. Why is Holmes having to find this guy's lost dog? It's not a lost dog. It's something like, something was dropped in a snake cage, and we need to jump through hoops in order to get this book out of the snake cage.
Sure. It was an important clue we need.
I don't think it was all that important. There's also a lot of, I feel like, failed pathways or ideas which could have been, maybe they would have been, like, fully fleshed storylines, but the game kind of, like, cut it out. Like, for example, at the very start of the game, you find out about it through a newspaper article that says, you know, this woman's been killed, she's the third person who's been killed, and then it's, like, hour number 15 into the game before Holmes goes back to that and realizes, wait, this was the third victim, not the first victim. Maybe I should look into the other two women that got killed. I'm like, that is just like mind-blowing stupidity right there. And then we get like a 15 to 20 minute puzzle segment where he finds old files on the mm-hmm. two women who were killed before. And he says, well, this one was probably killed by Jack the Ripper, and this one probably wasn't. And then the storyline ends there. Like, we don't go back to that again. So that felt like it might have been its own storyline, but it wasn't fully developed, and so they just kind of cut it off prematurely.
Huh. I wonder if they had some trouble with, like, the outline of this game. Because it sounds like the pacing, yeah, is kind of all over the place, and plot elements don't make sense. I wonder if a better outline, better organized outline would have helped people catch some of this stuff. Like, you see on the outline, oh, wow, we get the important clues that we need here. Why is there 8 more segments after that before we follow up on these clues? Maybe we should do something different instead.
That happened a lot. There are definitely times where you find, like, a clue, and then it's 40 minutes before you follow up on that.
Yeah.
So, like, we got witness statements, and then 40 minutes later, Holmes goes back to his apartment and actually analyzes the witness statements and makes a timeline. It's like, it feels like that's something that puzzle would have fit better right after getting the witness mm-hmm. statements.
Well, see, that's just why it's good that we mostly make silly comedy games. If stuff doesn't make as much sense, it still fits tonally with the game. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny in Lost Oregon City Gold. It's funny to use a plunger on a cannon.
Yeah, exactly.
Funny pictures with that.
Yeah,
too.
But you're Sherlock Holmes doing that, it would seem so stupid. Like, it wouldn't be funny. It would just be like, why are we doing this?
It's like there's a serial killer on the loose, and we're trying to find this guy's cane, and. Another thing this game does poorly is identifying which suspects are actually the suspects.
Okay.
Because at the very end of the game, they throw a suspect board at you and with 5 different suspects on it. And 2 of the characters, I had no idea they were actually supposed to be suspects. Apparently they were like real life people too. So I had no idea. Oh. It's like the guy whose cane, his cane got lost. And, he's doing inappropriate things because it's, let me see. Mm-hmm. Can I say the word brothel? He lost his cane at a brothel, and now he's, like, extorting the brothel owner to give him free services in exchange because he lost his very valuable cane. And so what Watson or Holmes has to do is find the cane to give it to the brothel owner to get this freeloader out of the brothel. And that way she gives you the information, which is something like, yeah, actually, I can confirm that guy is in the prison right now. It would have been so easy if Holmes just strolled into the prison at that point and asked, hey, is this guy in the prison? Rather than doing like 3 chores for 3 other people. There's another chore part of that sequence, which I forgot to mention. So the doctor at the hospital where the cane is, he refuses to let you have the cane unless you get something for him from another person. Yeah, and as I think you were saying, like, 7 hours later, I mean, that's the only time in the game we see that guy. 7 hours later, we're told, oh, he was one of your 5 suspects for the Jack the Ripper. He could have been Jack the Ripper. It's like, really? This guy with a cane? Because that's the extent of his story. He lost his cane in a brothel and is now like a seedy blackmailer.
I'm definitely seeing a pattern here. It really does seem like that the tone that they were going for with the story just doesn't match at all the puzzles that they were developing for this. Like, these are definitely like goofy, comical adventure game puzzles. And they don't really match with what is ostensibly supposed to be a serious murder investigation.
So yeah. There are some very serious murder scenes, which are kind of gross. Like, you're supposed to examine the dead bodies and see the clues. Like, you get the victims and you examine their wounds. And some of them are pretty graphic, actually. One of the weird things, too, is that we do that for the first four of the five murders, but not the fifth one. There is no crime scene investigation for murder number five. Another weird thing. So murders three and four happen both on the same night, because apparently that's what happened in real life. But Holmes is there. He hears about the murder, which is just like two blocks away. It's in a spot he was visiting multiple times that night. And Holmes decides, mm-hmm. I'm going to go home and do something else. And then like 2 weeks later, he goes back and investigates both those murder scenes. It's like, why didn't he do that the night of?
Well, how does he get involved in this then? Is he like,
he just happens to be around whenever murders? He just kind of happens to be around. Like I said, he just happened to be there when the murder where it took place.
See, this is where roommate Dave would have come in handy. Holmes gets back being like, oh yeah, there were a couple murders tonight. That's pretty wild, right? And then roommate Dave has to be like, Sherlock, maybe you should investigate this while the crime scene is still fresh, instead of just sitting around and playing Minecraft for the next 2 weeks. And Sherlock is like, I don't know. And then that's the puzzle, is Dave has to convince him.
Yes.
A lot of potential here. I don't know how, what the solution to the puzzle would be, if it's just like a dialogue puzzle or you have to show him something that gets him off his butt. I don't know how what the actual answer is there.
I think one other weird thing, and then I'll probably stop ripping it, but with that third murder, like we
ripping
see the
it.
Scene.
Yeah.
Jack the Ripper has an accomplice with murder number three. Like the accomplice scares away a potential witness. So he like yells at the potential witness and chases the potential witness down a block. And that is something like the game doesn't follow up on. Like we never find out who the accomplice is. He never gets mentioned again. We're just told that the accomplice scared this potential witness away. And then I think we investigate the potential witness, but we never bother to find out who this accomplice is, and it never gets explained at the end.
So I wonder if, too, we're running into an issue where the developers were trying to incorporate these details from the real-life story, the guy with the cane at the brothel, this witness. Like, these are details that come from the actual real-life events. But then there was no actual way for them to fit them into the story in a way that made sense. So they just kind of shoved him into these little spots there and just kind of let him be.
Yeah, I think another problem is another problem is that we are limited locations, right? Like we have to go back to the scene of the second murder. So most of the game, like I'd say 70 to 75% of the game just takes place within this one, like, rather tiny neighborhood. And since I played some of the other games, I can recognize it. Like, okay, well, the bookstore where he goes to, that appears in, like, two of the other Sherlock Holmes games. So they clearly were just, like, reusing that scene.
Mm-hmm.
So that might have hurt it, too, trying to develop a storyline. Yeah. It's like, well, we can't really visit all these locations. So he has to keep going back to the same three locations. We already have a bookstore. We can't have him go to somewhere else. It's like we already built that set. I don't know. What's the term for that? I don't think that. It's probably more of an
environment
issue.
Level.
Yeah, I think it's more of an issue with like three-dimensional games like the Sherlock Holmes ones, where it's like they will have the exact same bookstore appear in like three different games, because that saves them a lot of money.
Oh, that's why. I mean, I've talked about this before. That's why our photo graphics work so well. Or is one of the reasons anyway, is that we can go to a billion different locations and it doesn't really hurt our time budget or monetary budget in any significant way. Much easier to add new pictures than it is to actually create new backgrounds, either drawing a 2D one or building a 3D one. Should we switch over to listener questions? We got a couple of them this month. All right, this question comes to us from AlphaGamer47 on our Discord. I don't know if this has been answered on the podcast, but maybe you could do it in December, since everyone does retrospectives. How would the two of you rank all the games you've made, or perhaps a list of top 5 point-and-click adventure games or Nancy Drew games. And I was thinking we could shorten this a little bit. What is your favorite game? One, what is your favorite game that O-Rock Studios has done? And two, what is like your favorite game that you've done outside of O-Rock Studios, like your choice of game stuff or anything else?
I think with O-Rock Studios, I know Cat President and the Pizza Delivery Boy Who Saved the World are the two big sellers. And so those are the ones that I tend to pump the most, or, you know, I tend to mention them most often. I think that's in my Twitter profile. And when I was playing Oregon City Gold, those were the ones I liked. I know a couple people really like the Francie Drew games, but they do not sell anywhere near as much as
No, they do not. As Pizza Boy.
As Pizza Boy,
President.
Yeah. I really wish that, you know, Lost Oregon City Gold. I really wanted to make a sequel because now it feels like I know how to actually make a game that way.
Yeah. I think my favorite of the games we've worked on together is Cat President 2 specifically. I think that's like when we sort of hit our stride with the writing and the political satire. My Photoshop skills improved quite a bit when we were working on that. I just think it's our funniest, best written game, in my opinion. In terms of games that I made not with Michael, I will always have a fondness in my heart for The Beard in the Mirror, a game that I built with my wife over the course of a decade in my favorite genre, point-and-click adventure game. I just love that game to death.
I was just pulling up the list of the games I had done, like the games I had done for Choice of Games. I mean, according to Miss Bennett's the one that sells the best. I really liked Pride and Prejudice and Murder. I went down again this month. That's sad. One Minute Mysteries, I feel, doesn't get the love it deserves. And Kidnap Prom Queen.
I think that's my favorite Michael game.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like my top... I made, like, you know, ranking the Nancy Drew games. So, let's see. This is a game that my picture is in, Secrets Can Kill Remastered.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's game number
That's
8.
That's clearly number 1, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And game number 8, The Haunted Carousel, which is, you know, the first game I played. So, for me, that's really high up there. Then, let's see.
Mm-hmm.
Feels weird to say this. Treasure in the Royal Tower is number 4. Final Scene, which is game number 5. Last Train to Blue Moon Canyon, which I think is game 13. And Curse of Blackmoor Manor, which is like 10 or 11. So, like, my favorites, like, pretty much most of the fans, were, like, in the first half of the series. No offense to the second half of the series. Yeah.
I didn't see the Salem, Midnight in
yeah,
Salem
no, that's,
on there.
Where is it? Is that at the bottom of... No, that's like third to last. Sorry, Midnight in Salem. Mm.
And to answer the other part of Alpha Gamer's question, I'll take the top 5 point-and-click adventure games one. The top 3 is always Curse of Monkey Island / the Monkey Island series, Day of the Tentacle and Sam & Max Hit the Road. And then I guess sort of depending on how open you are about the definition of an adventure game, Life is Strange / the Life is Strange series is absolutely on my list. And Phoenix Wright, which is very debatably an adventure game. It's certainly more of a visual novel, but I think it still counts. So those ones. And also honorable mention to the Back to the Future adventure game that Telltale made, because that's one I still go back to every now and then and still enjoy quite a bit.
Yeah, I feel like I want to go back to it and play it again.
Yeah.
I know the controls... Actually, I could probably play it with a controller, right? Because now I've got an Xbox controller.
Yeah, that's how I've always done it.
That'd probably be easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to using the mouse, but... I guess part of my problem with that was, what do you call it? I don't know. Do they still make episodic games, what they call it, right?
Yeah.
It feels so like the newest Sherlock Holmes game, I'm told, is like an episodic game. But it feels more like so they're releasing a bunch of like 2-hour cases as opposed to releasing, them all at once. But I feel like they're releasing that as like DLC or something like that, season pass. I don't know what they call it these days.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'll just wait for them to actually finish the game before playing it all at once.
Oh yeah, that's what I do with episodic games now. Like I do not like the old Telltale style of we'll release 1/5 of the game every 2 months. Like that's just not fun to me. That is not a fun way to play a game or take in a story. It didn't work for me then. It certainly doesn't work for me now. I guess I didn't realize Sherlock Holmes was doing that, because I didn't think too many companies were really still doing that. I think that fad has kind of had its day, thankfully.
Yeah, well, I also feel like one of the questions is how much do they change the game, like change episode 2 based on the response to episode 1?
Yeah,
and
sure.
So on and so forth. Because it's really hard to like change a game in just a month, right?
Yeah, I would imagine. Anyway, I know we're running long, but I think we should get to the other question, because it is Christmas themed and it will seem very off topic if we do it next month. So Joe Reviewer, also on our Discord, asks, do you still get video games as Christmas gifts, and or do you get yourself video games, quote unquote, for Christmas? And my answer to that is yes and no.
I don't know who I would give video games to. I don't think I have anybody on my list that would enjoy getting video games. But I did purchase a number of video games this month. But at the same time, I usually get video games so I could play them for my YouTube channel. So it's,
sure.
You know, I could buy games for myself, and they count as a business expense that way.
Yeah, no, I am. My family still does like Christmas lists, even for the grown-ups like me, my brothers and my parents. So I did have a bunch of games on my list this year. I really wanted to get Psychonauts 2. There's a new Little Big Planet game that came out last year called Sackboy: A Big Adventure. And I also had, I never remember how you're supposed to pronounce this. Have you heard about this RPG? It's Live Alive, or Live Alive, or possibly Live Alive, or Live Alive. I don't know.
It's
L-I-V-E-A. Okay, yeah. Well, a remake of that just came out this year, and I didn't have the remake on my list, but I did have the original Super Nintendo game, which was only released in Japan. But there is like an English translated version on a reproduction Super Nintendo cart, and that was on my list. So very, very, very specific item for Santa Claus to figure out there. But yeah, I feel like in 2022, it's sort of harder both to ask for games and to give games because so much of it is just digital only now. It's, I don't know, you have to get kind of creative if you want to give a game to someone, because otherwise, you're just wrapping up like a piece of paper that says, I bought this game and installed it on your Steam account, or whatever. Kind of takes some of the fun out of it. I don't know.
And then, like, is there a way to buy a game for somebody from their Steam account and, like, not have them be notified until, say, Christmas?
Yeah, I don't know. One year, I bought a digital Switch game for my wife for Christmas, and I was like, this is dumb, I don't want to just give her a piece of paper or whatever. So I actually bought online, someone was selling fake Switch cases with like fake cover art for that game. So I bought her essentially an empty box and gave that to her, and was like, yeah, this the game is installed on the Switch now, but I got the box just so I'd have something to wrap and put under the tree.
Okay.
Yeah. It's tough. Anyway, I think that about does it for this month's episode. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Paul M. Franzen, and Michael is at Arglefumpf, spelled exactly as it sounds. You can check out our games on PC and console, or just visit orock.com for the complete library. Our theme song is by Fifth Avenue. You can check them out on SoundCloud. And finally, if you have any questions about game development or our game specifically, we'd love to hear them. email them to podcast@orrock.com, or I guess just post them in the Discord. That's where we've been getting most of the questions lately. Is there anything that you'd like to add, Michael?
Buy all of our games for Christmas. I'm sure everybody would love getting an empty Switch case with a piece of paper that says, I got you too many Santas.
It's the perfect gift for that person that's hard to buy for. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. A story will be told. Go!
Monkey Island is broken up into chapters.